everybody loves a night out, whether it's seeing your favorite band in person or maybe being there in the crowd to cheer on your favorite team. Well, with the Vivid Seats Rewards loyalty program, you can go to the concert or show of your choice and earn credit towards your next live event. Vivid Seats is the top source for tickets for all the live events you want to go to. You can sort by price or look for seats in the section and row of your choice, all in the Vivid Seats app. To make things even better, Vivid Seats now has a loyalty program that allows fans to earn credit back. All you need to do is use the Vivid Seats app to purchase tickets and start earning today. Go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app. Fans are automatically enrolled in the Vivid Seats Rewards loyalty program. Every purchase is backed by a 100% buyer guarantee. From the biggest concerts and games to the hottest theater shows and more, Vivid Seats has it all. Download the app and join the Vivid Seats Rewards loyalty program today. Make a memory that lasts a lifetime and let the Vivid Seats app help you get to your favorite live event. Enter promo code ESPN25 for 10% off your next order.
An around the horn investigation into who had the toughest job last night. Not Clemson trying to stop Burrow and Chase. Not the camera operator in the way of Orgeron. Not the NCAA trying to stop Beckham from handing out cash. No, the hardest job, the police officer trying to designate a smoking area. No smoking here. Ah.
Full sport.
Out around Joe.
What do you want?
Fire up.
Victory cigars. What's wrong with that?
Yeah. All right, national panel, was there anything Clemson could have done differently last night?
No.
Was there any?
No.
Okay, that's fine. Let's go right. Cut to the chase here with the all-time greatest team ever debate. The all-time question is one we always ask, it seems, the day after the championship. You always scoff. You blame recency bias. Let me posit, by the way, there is a reverse recency bias, too. An example, ESPN's top 150 college football player list came out last night. You have to get to 21 before they had a player in the last 30 years and 45 before they had a player in the 2000s. That's reverse recency bias. But this LSU season, where they beat five of the top eight teams, Tim Kalishaw, is this the best college football season ever?
I think it's the best resume ever, and I think in any kind of ranking, you're going to put them in the top five. An undefeated team when they're playing 15 games now. Yep. 20 years ago, they were playing 12. So the road has gotten tougher, more tough games at the end of the year. They played seven teams that were in the top 10 at the time they played them. Now, I know early season rankings are a little shaky, but at the time, hey, Ed Orgeron brought up Texas. He thought it was a tough game. He thought that was the springboard, but when you look at all the records they're compiling, most points ever, the teams they had to beat, the final one, team that won 29 straight games, I think they got to be in the top three to top five.
All right, there's ever. A little bit of, there's top three to top five. Let me ask, are they the best team ever, Woody Page?
Yes, they are. I'll give you the top five. You didn't give me a chance the other day, but Cornhuskers twice, 95 and 71, Miami in 01, and a Texas team in 05. And, of course, they joined them, but they passed all of them because of their accomplishments, because of their quarterback, because of who they did beat in a tough schedule, because they play in the SEC, because of all those reasons. And they blew out in consecutive games Georgia in the conference championship, Oklahoma, and then Clemson. What more? What do you want from them to prove this is the best team of all time?
Greatest team of all time, says Woody Page. Clinton Nates, you were there with him?
It's a yes, and I don't need all those things Woody mentioned. I can just go to the system of the college football playoff. What did we spend all this time arguing about the, you know, what, why we won a champion for if when some team barrels through everybody like this with an actual playoff, we're not going to automatically name them the best. I don't need to look at all these other teams. I watched the football. That team looks like it has at least six guys on offense who could play on Sunday and probably another eight on defense. Just watching, I'm thinking, wow, I have not seen a football team dominate another team like this in a place like this. And if you're going to give credit to the purpose of the playoff, you have to say they're the best. It's unbelievable.
And Kevin Blackstone, you've covered decades of college football. Is this the best team ever?
Well, up until now, the best team I ever saw was the 1995 Nebraska Cornhuskers that Woody referenced. They burrowed everybody that they played.
I see what you did there.
In fact, they took out Florida 62-24 in the national championship game. They won by averages of like something like 53-14 every game. Nobody was close. They, too, were loaded with NFL players. But this is a different era, as Tim suggested. You've got two playoff games that you have to go through. SEC has never been better, and you know what it's like going through there. And these guys also played Texas and some other teams that were not cupcakes off their schedule. So you know what? You've got to give these guys the best market.
Tim, I'm going to give you a chance to name those other teams that you think are in the conversation real quick.
Well, I think Woody hit on about three of them, especially Nebraska, both 71 and 95. I would put 87 Miami, the team that knocked off Switzer's team that was on a ridiculous run.
And nobody wants to go further back, any of the Oklahoma teams that never lost for half of a decade, or Notre Dame or Army, or you think that's too disparate a game right now.
69 Texas that brought the wishbone to football. There we go.
Well, let me ask you the same question for Joe Burrow. Because what we just witnessed from the quarterback position, 60 touchdown passes for the season, the all-time record, had another 5 on the ground. Completion percentage was the second best ever. So he has the best ever touchdowns, second best ever completion percentage. Yes, impossible to compare him to what, just to throw out a name, Paul Hornung was doing 60 years ago at the quarterback and running back positions. But Woody, is this the best quarterback season ever?
Yes, it is, and I will go sort of in the direction of Clinton. It's the fact that he passed the eye test. I say, of all the quarterbacks I've ever seen in the postseason, he is the best. I thought Dan Marino was at one time. I've gone over Joe Namath's performance, but nobody's ever accomplished what he has this year. We know it's a passing kind of formation that exists today in college football, but for him to be responsible for 6 touchdowns last night, that was just devastating to Clemson. They couldn't respond to that. Yes, he is the best performance last night. He is the best performer of the entire season.
Clint Yates, was this the best quarterback season ever?
I think so. You talk about recency bias, and I think one of the things that people forget about Burrow is that winning the Heisman in the national championship, not easy, not something more than a handful of guys have done. It's happened a bunch in the last 5 years, but in the previous 80 years that all these other guys refer to in terms of college football greats, it doesn't go down. And so when you see his ease in the pocket, you see about how he's looked at by NFL scouts, and you see how he was simply poised to win that game in the way that he did, I can't imagine a better player coming out. 23 years old, grad transfer, there's a reason why that experience mattered in that game.
Kevin Blackstone?
Yeah, the experience did matter. 23 years old. Older than Lamar Jackson, by the way. But absolutely. 60 touchdowns, 5,600 yards passing this year. The completion percentage. And the fact that look what he did the last 2 games, right? Postseason games. What do you have, 12, 13 touchdowns? And against Clemson, over 500 yards total offense and all those touchdowns? That is absolutely amazing. I don't think there's any question that this is the best college season we've seen from a quarterback.
It's possible you had a misspeak there, Kevin, but I'm going to allow it because who knows how many yards he had for this year. It could be 1 million yards, 50,000. Yeah, sure. Tim Kalishaw, is this the greatest season ever by a quarterback?
I think it's got to be. The only one I can think of in recent years is Cam Newton and what he did in his single season at Auburn, almost certainly surrounded by not as talented players. You got to mention these LSU receivers who go up and get those passes and do a fabulous job. I would still say best national championship big game quarterback performance remains Vince Young for over 200 yards rushing and 200 yards passing against the team. This network was already comparing to the greatest teams in college
football. All right, we understand. You hold a little grudge. Tim, I'm fine with you picking a fight with ESPN over that. That's absolutely in play here. But you think Vince Young's big game was as good as Burrow last night?
Because of the opponent, but Burrow's season is untouched.
You say because of the opponent. Okay, Clemson hadn't lost in about 700 days. So that opponent was pretty stout as well.
Every team in the history
of
college football.
Let's talk about Trevor Lawrence and Clemson for just a little bit, because this is an amazing thing to say. This was Trevor Lawrence's first loss ever, all right? He had all the overthrows. The anguish he had at the podium after the game was kind of hard to watch. And there was real criticism he received for yet His first loss of his career. Clinton Yates, how'd you hear it?
You know, I'm not going to criticize this kid for the position he was put in. Let's not forget, Kelly Bryant could have been a quarterback on this team, another 23-year-old. I'm not going to deny the karmic element to that with Dabo. But the reason I say that is this. Dabo and them looked like they were panicking this game in terms of how they tried to win it. It seemed as if they were trying to outsmart everybody because they couldn't line up and just beat that team. All those overthrows, this kid was too pumped up for a game that he needed a little bit more composure in. And I don't think that the coaching staff did him a bunch of favors in it.
Woody Page?
Well, he overthrew 13 receivers in the game. That's the most in FBS history. That looked to me like he was nervous, that he wasn't prepared for this. I'm like you, Clinton. I don't want to criticize amateur athletes, but he's the one who said, I had a bad night. He said, I didn't throw that well. He's absolutely right. 50% of the time, he really wasn't even in the game in regard to those passes. And I don't think the coaches did him any favors of adjusting as LSU did after what happened early in the game. It's like, okay, we're doing well. We're ahead 17-7. So, no, he'll come back, though. He'll be even better next year.
Did Kalisho, do you look at Trevor Lawrence?
I think the bad... Yeah, I mean, nah, I don't change the way I look at him. He's still the best for next year. The bad night, I think, was a frustrating night. Those passes you just showed, every one of those, he's looking at covered receivers. There's nobody open to throw it to. That's part of the reason. Now, he missed some guys, but I think he got hit a lot as the game went on, and I think they did get away from getting the ball to ETN, who I think had a better chance to be a dominant player than Clemson allowed.
I want to move on here for you, Kevin Blackstone, because I want to get to the apology everybody owes Ed Orgeron. It has to be as loud as the disrespect was in the first place. This was a man who was told, you know, I don't know, not you. Maybe you're a full-time assistant. Maybe that's where your career ends. Maybe interim. Be happy with interim. He is a national championship now. What does it mean, Kevin Blackstone?
Well, it means that LSU did the right thing. And it means the right thing was given a guy who does not look like he should be the person on the front lawn of your university greeting everyone and greeting the nation to be your football coach. But he's a great guy, apparently. And what a story. Coon-ass Louisiana is on the map right now because of Ed Orgeron.
You said it, KB.
Well, look, that is a phrase that is used in Louisiana, and if you're from down around those parts, you know what I'm talking about. That's not a slight, but that is a compliment, and I'm really glad that that university went out and embraced him as
Tim Kalisho?
As has been pointed out, USC had him as an interim coach. They said, no, we'll try Steve Sarkisian. LSU had him as an interim coach and got interested in Tom Herman before they settled on him. So, yeah, I mean, he's a great story in Louisiana. Got to be the most beloved man in the state.
Let me say this. I have said his voice sounded like a fork stuck in a garbage disposal. And I still hear that, and I still think that's awesome. My voice sounds like the Staten Island Ferry taking a juice cleanse. So I'm not the one to talk, and I talk for a living. Point! I have zero national championships. Being thought of as one way, it's all nonsense. When people talk, it's quite often about themselves. It's not about you. So what Orgeron did that we should all take a lesson from, you don't let other people define you. You don't make yourself the object of someone else's sentence. You make yourself the subject of your own. And then you go out and you coach the hell out of your football team and you be exactly who you are. Ed Orgeron, national championship. Go Tigers. Buy yourselves next.
Tigers.
Welcome back to Around the Horn, brought to you by Chase. Coming to you from the Seaport District at Pier 17.
The Dodgers were jobbed out of a championship, and what is MLB going to do about that? The Astros should be forced to hand the commissioner's trophy, vacate the title, and forever leave that space in the record books as empty as the organization's integrity. That's our Bill Plaschke, LA Times. Day two of the fallout from the Astros scandal. Plaschke had play-by-play of at-bats versus Kershaw and Darvish he thought were suspicious. We'll put up the stats as well in the home and road splits. Major League Baseball's not going to vacate the 2017 title, Clinton Yates. Buy or sell that?
I'll buy that. I don't really do... Vacating doesn't do much for me in this day and age. It feels a little bit trite in terms of what the actual penalty is for the people involved. You want to penalize somebody? Penalize the owner. How about you bang him out for, like, I don't know, half of the $60 million it was reported that they made off of that championship? Or maybe take a look at what he's getting in TV revenue to hit him where it hurts.
Woody Page?
Clinton, I disagree with you. Money is not enough. I think that if you leave an empty space, even though I call them the Houston Asterix, I don't think that's the proper kind of reaction. Roger Maris had one of those marks against his name for years, and all he did was play in a few extra games that was scheduled. So I think you just say that on those years, there was no champion. That's the way you change 1918.
You would vacate the title. Okay. Tim Kalishow, would you?
Way too strong a punishment in a sport that not only allows for visual sign stealing, but kind of embraces stories of it. The shot heard round the world, Bobby Thompson, 1951 Giants. Everybody loves that moment. And then they kind of say, yeah, by the way, they had a camera, or they had a guy out in the center field at the Polo Grounds telling them what pitch was coming.
Mm.
It's been going on for years.
And Kevin Blackstone, are you as laissez-faire as Kalishow is here?
Well, absolutely not. I mean, look, this was a systemic thing using new technology and going on for months. They absolutely can be accused of stealing this particular title, and therefore, I think that it should be vacated. And I also agree with Clinton. You can fine them even more than the $5 million you already hit them for. Okay. You can do both things. There's nothing wrong with that.
Meanwhile, Alex Cora has the Sword of Damocles hanging over him. And baseball's decision not to punish players in this. I want to talk about that. The reality that the steroid scandal was all about punishing players, even to this day in the Hall of Fame. This scandal, active participants not punished. Buy or sell that, Woody?
Well, I'm going to buy, actually, the difficulty for Major League Baseball. In order to have a full investigation, they had to offer the players immunity, and the Players Association really wouldn't have allowed them to be suspended for cheating in a game, so you got to change the rules. But in regard to Cora, who should be fired, should be suspended, then fired by the Red Sox, and Beltre actually should be suspended for 100 games or fired by
Beltran,
the Mets.
A player, and now manager of the Mets. Tim Kalishow, how about you?
Yeah, I think it's unfortunate. I know what baseball's doing. They don't want to turn their star players into villains. It's okay to get rid of management-type people, but when Jose Altuve and Bregman come up to bat, they don't want people looking at them in a different way, even though I think
KB,
a lot of people will be anyway.
Well, you know what? But it kind of leaves it out there because the commissioner said there were so many players involved, it kind of made it difficult to punish the player. So it makes you think now that they're all involved. So sometimes maybe it's better to pick out a few than ignore them all.
Clint Yates.
Cora is going to get a much bigger punishment than Hitch, and it will be unfair. But the reason why Cora is going to get it is because he actually won a World Series as a rookie manager. And if they had washed out of the playoffs and they'd still found it, he probably wouldn't have gotten the same penalty. And that's unfair, but it makes sense as far as human nature is concerned.
Fire Cell 3, the WNBA's new agreement with players. Let's talk about that. Got a full rollout on Good Morning America. Salaries doubling for top players, at least. New opportunity for cash bonuses, full paid maternity leave, better travel, health, and well-being. Revenue split could be up to 50-50 by next season. What strikes you, Tim Kalishow?
You know, I think the part where they're trying to do things to pay star players that will allow them not to, as soon as the WNBA season ends, hop in a plane and fly to Europe and Russia and make all the extra money they've needed over there. I think they're going in the right direction.
Yeah, I like the deal with revenue sharing. That's big. And the deal for folks who are going to be parents and being able to take care of their families, I think that is huge as well.
Clint Yates.
Unbelievable to think that the WNBA was so far back on the basic concept of maternity leave. But yes, it's revenue sharing. And why? Because it teaches young athletes you can grow up and actually make a living doing this. You don't have to make all sorts of other sacrifices just to play the game that
and
you
Woody
love.
Page.
Sure, I'm buying it. $500,000 possibility. That is so far away from the numbers they were getting. But also, why not get the charter airplanes for them? Moving them up to premium economy? Why not at least business on the flights? I mean,
well, that's
really,
one of the ridiculous things about it. Part of this was getting just that, premium on flights. Just getting no roommates in hotels. I know I made the rounds last year when I went on a rant about salaries. I looked it up, the WNBA combined didn't make what Miles Plumlee made. But that the league revenue split is getting closer to 50-50 and that they have to earn it. That's the way it should be. But one other thing I want to say here. Salaries are important. What's more important is the steps forward we're making in breaking through on how we treat our employees and women in health, mental health, and how they're treated. That's the biggest game. Moving the ball forward. Sinead Igbinoghe said, We did this for the next generation, and that's the point. To demonstrate how you know your value, demand your value, negotiate your value, not just as a basketball player, but as a person who makes up 51% of the world population. Clinton Yates, thank you for today. Same with Kevin Blackstone, Woody Page, Tim Kalishaw. Showdown next.
There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
Zion Williamson may make his NBA debut Thursday night versus the Jazz. It's enormous. It's thrilling. It's something or nothing. Zion seemed to be zoning out, if not catnapping, on the Pelicans bench last night. Woody Page.
It's something. He realizes, as the rest of us do, that that team is so boring, it's not worth staying awake for. But when he comes back, if he is supposed to, on Thursday night, everybody will stay awake all game.
It's something I just marvel at. As someone who struggles to sleep by himself, I can't believe people who sleep in crowds at airports.
There's two minutes to go in the game.
You struggle to sleep by yourself?
What's the alternative, Tim Kalishaw?
I don't sleep much. I'm awake most of the night. It's all right. Get ready for the show.
Showdown 2, Brad Marchand shootout attempt last night. Oops! Over skating the puck on a shootout attempt. Does that deserve a do-over or the skate of shame, Tim?
I know there's a lot of people who don't always like Brad Marchand. You should get a do-over there. You know, when you tee up a golf ball, if you accidentally touch it with your driver and it falls off, that's not a stroke. You get to go back.
Tim, this is not golf. This is hockey where you're supposed to be able to hit the puck. He doesn't deserve anything except a walk of shame because he whiffed. And when you whiff, you take your blame with you.
Uh-huh. I'm just worried for Kalishaw to have a sleepless night. Alone, at home. Boy, Tim Kalishaw, 30 seconds of face time.
For what?
It's all about show preparation. I don't know how everybody else felt about the halftime. Seeing all the veterans out there, it was cool to see Jim Brown, Archie Griffin, Barry Sanders, and all the rest. But seeing Earl Campbell there, and he's seated and not in the greatest of health, it's a reminder of the toll this game takes. Earl and I walked across that same communications degree stage in the University of Texas. He was in front of me alphabetically. He might have got a little more applause. But, you know, you'd like to think the best for him and hope he's getting around okay. But it's mainly just cool to see when running backs were the kings.
Where
of the
was
game.
Bo Jackson and Dicka on the stage, by the way? They weren't there. But there was a reverse recency bias